Is that recording?
Yes.
Who would know? Okay. Somewhere here is my... It shouldn't surprise us that words have power. We've all seen and used words, both positively and negatively, and it's obvious that the words we speak can either make us or break us, as well as the person or persons that they're directed at. Joyce Meyer puts it like this. She says, words are containers for power. You choose what kind of power they carry. What an awesome responsibility. Yet all too often we open our mouths before we get our brain in gear. One of the things that was saying before the service was that, are you going to tell any stories about the Air Force? Well, there's none in my notes, but I thought I'd share this one. We'd just done a whole week of risk analysis procedures. And I don't know whether you've ever done the risk analysis stuff, but it's just so complicated. And within the Defence Force, it goes to a new level because everything is risky. And I remember we got to the end of this week. It had been a boring sort of time. And the CEO says to me, oh, you won't have to worry about that, will you, Padre? And I was trying to remember which CEO that was. So I think I probably said, ma'am, every time I open my mouth, I'm taking an enormous risk. Because not just what I say, but how those words may be interpreted can be used against the Defence Force and very effectively get all of us into a lot of trouble. And she scratched her head for a while and said, maybe you're right. Because she'd totally ruled out that there was any risk in the things that I might say. But this passage before us together today makes it very plain that speaking is very risky. James has a message for us. Are we prepared to really listen? Well, I warn you, he's a bit harsh, but it has a ring of truth. James says a lot about the power of words, mainly directed about the spoken word, and sees the tongue, just this little bit that flaps up and down, as being the culprit. But take note, most of it also applies to the written word and all those other ways we had to, you know, electronically create words and share them. So let's have a look at what he has to say. The first thing he talks about is the fact that words have power to teach. For most of my working life, I've been a teacher. No, I didn't teach in a school. I taught in the pathology lab, I taught in a church, and I taught in the Air Force. I use words in each of those contexts. Actually, very different sets of words. You know, how to do a particular test in the laboratory. You know, preaching from the Bible in the church. And in the Air Force, we did all sorts of interesting things like communication skills, introduction to military ethics, and a whole band of other stuff. But you know, it wasn't just the words that I said. It wasn't just the stuff that I had to share. It was all about who I was, which affected my choice of words. It shared something about what I believed and something I would hope that God was able to use those words to say something about the fact that I was a Christian, even though often I wasn't even talking about that. Now, James must have had some of the teachers that I've had. Some of the ones that have tried to teach me. So stop and think about it. Who were the teachers in your life that taught you the most? course, they come in three groups. The first group were the ones who knew the most. They didn't seem to teach me much. The next ones were the ones that said the most. You know, I can give you the most knowledge by giving you the most words. And most of the time I went to sleep in those ones. The ones who really were effective were the ones who were open and honest, who took their job seriously, who were passionate about how they did it, who wanted to be effective. They were even that small group that were able to admit that there were things that they didn't know, things that they didn't understand. Now, some of my best friends, actually these two guys in the front here are both has-been teachers. So some of my best friends are teachers or have been teachers. But I've been around long enough to recognise that one of the problems in our school system today, dare I say it, is that a lot of teachers end up there because they don't know what else to do. And that, I believe, is creating a lot of problems in our schools and our academic institutions. If you sit down and talk to some of these teachers, they like learning. They're comfortable in a class setting. They're fearful of making mistakes in the real world. And they think that they would be good teachers. Wrong. It takes a whole range of specific gifts and abilities to make an effective teacher. Much more than just keeping one lesson ahead of the students. All teachers, James tells us, are called to highly responsible work. Their job is to mould minds, to lead them in the right direction, or the wrong one, some of them. It is a powerful role. And James says quite clearly, if you want to be a teacher, take a second thought. Think very seriously about this, because it's a powerful role, and you teachers will be held responsible for the words you've spoken. And you'll be held responsible if you've led others astray in the process. Well, we might say, well, why do you think that is? Well, James doesn't leave us guessing. His next point is that words have power to direct. And James paints two pictures of small things that have the power to direct things much bigger and more powerful than the tool itself, than the tool used. How many of you have ridden a horse? Most of you. They are powerful animals, which have a mind of their own. And if you don't know what you're doing, or the horse has not been trained well, it will be in charge and not you. The last time I rode a horse, we were mustering cattle out in the Central West. And the guy who was running the show said, you want to take the horse or the motorcycle? I said, I'll take the motorcycle every time, because it was much more predictable. But of course, it gets to the end where we've got most of the cattle in the rounded up. And he says, you and you, take the two horses. There was a group that broke off, you know. And I said, you sure? He said, yeah, you'll be right. The horse knows the area. He knows what he's got to do. Just stay with him. I thought, wow, what a challenge that is. It was the most exciting ride I've ever been on, you know. But I got back in one piece, and it was, I've thought ever since about this when I read this passage, you know. The bridle is the only thing I've got to control this horse, and it knows exactly where it wants to go, and no matter what I told it, it did what I wanted. The only thing you've got to control a horse is a small bit of metal in their mouths. Yet if you and the horse are working together, a small touch can direct it wherever you want it to go. In fact, making it much more effective than either you or the horse on its own. You have the power over a 500 to 1,000 kilogram of muscle to use for good or evil. Now, obviously, the James's mind, the picture was that of a war horse. They were fearful creatures, as dangerous as the rider, and together they were lethal. What a picture about what words can do. And some horses can indeed control by your voice commands. The next example is that of a rudder of a ship. Again, a very small thing in comparison to the size of the ship. Even in a battle against strong winds, the pilot can make the ship go where he wants. He is in control of great power. Again, that can be used for good or for evil. James says, when you speak, your tongue, though small, like the bridle or the rudder, has great power to control something far larger than itself. I was challenged to reread some of the pieces out of this book that says, speeches that change the world. Now, you would think, to get into a book like this, they would all be positive and encouraging and supportive. Guess what? In terms of speeches that have changed the world, there's one in here by Hitler. There's Joseph Stalin's got in the act. These were charismatic people who used the power of words to take people in the wrong direction. Challenging things when you read some of those words, and you can say, well, I understand maybe why people got off the track here. He had some really good arguments. Powerful speakers. That's what James is trying to tell us. You have power when you can speak. It's how you use that power. You can direct. Not only that, the third point in this message is the fact that your words have the power to destroy. I suppose the saddest part of the message is that sometimes people with good intent say things without really thinking about how they may affect others or how they may be used by others. James says it's a bit like lighting a fire to keep warm or cook your dinner. Very positive thing, uses for words, uses for fire. But that same fire, if left unattended, or somebody else deliberately manipulates it, can be used to cause enormous destruction. Bushfires that we've all seen, destroying thousands of acres of farms, houses, forests, native animals, livestock, and people, even risking the lives of the RFS volunteers trying to finally get it under control. Yes, your words can be used to destroy in ways you've never even imagined. James tells us why. He says, all too often we allow the world to corrupt our minds, and the result, in Peterson's translation, he says, a careless or a wrongly placed word can ruin the world, turn harmony into chaos, throw mud on a reputation, send the whole world up in smoke. Smoke right from the pit of hell. Great picture, isn't it? A careless or a wrongly placed word can ruin the world, turn harmony to chaos, throw mud on a reputation, send the whole world up in smoke. Smoke right from the pit of hell. In my scripture reading this week, I came across this gem from Proverbs 12, and it says this: reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongues of the wise bring healing. So in terms of what James is saying to us, is there any hope for us? Will we kill and destroy or bring healing? Yes, there is hope. Because words also have the power to bless. James recognises that people, when they really set their minds to it, can do amazing things like train animals of all kinds, get lions and tigers to eat out of their hands. But the hardest thing to tame is the tongue, he says. The tongue runs wild, a wanton killer, able to even bless and curse. One quote I came across this week said this: the human tongue is a beast few can master. It strains to break out of its cage, and if it's not tamed, it will run wild and cause you great grief. So what do we have? We have a choice. In the words of the 12-step programs, the first step is to recognise we can't do it on our own. And James is saying that quite clearly. We need the help of a higher power. In fact, the one who created tongues can help us to control their output. Yes, your words can bless or curse, but James says they shouldn't be doing both. And God can give you the power to overcome your natural tendency. The key is you've got to choose to allow God to do that. You've got to choose to bless God and claim his power to overcome. So what are you going to do with all that? Yes, words have power, and it is your choice how you use them. To teach, to direct, to destroy, or to bless. But you can't do it on your own. Jesus took on flesh, lived among us, and as we come to the communion table, died for us to give us the power to overcome our natural tendencies. No, we don't always get it right. But here around the communion table, we have the opportunity for yet another clean start. If you love the Lord, if you've blown it in controlling your tongue, then I invite you to share with us with these simple elements as we gather around the table. For these elements speak of Jesus' broken body and his shed blood, which gives us power even to control our tongues. Any questions? Oh, no.